The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
Well, this week our Leaving Cert students will receive their long-awaited results. We've all seen how badly it was handled in the UK with complaints that disadvantaged students were unfairly treated. Our next guest, Tommy Collison, is Head of Business Development at Lambda School, a college in the US that tries to help disadvantaged students, those with disabilities and those from ethnic minorities, to get a foothold in the tech industry. They don't charge people for their education, but instead ask for 17% of their income for the first 2 years working. Tommy, originally from Tipperary, was born with cerebral palsy himself, and he took some classes at the school. Tommy, we'll get to your own situation in a moment, but in terms of Lambda School, what kinds of backgrounds are we talking about here?
There's kind of so many stories in the sense, you know, with a graduate who was living out of his car, who went on to get a great job and kind of get his first home. You know, we've had people go from Starbucks baristas to engineers, to software engineers. You know, we've had single parents go through the program and, you know, they're now able to support three kids as a single parent on their new development salary. And so these people have it in them. They just need kind of the opportunity and the setup and the kind of launch pad, for the want of a better word.
Are you to some extent kicking back against the traditional American university education system, which is built to a certain extent on privilege, particularly the top universities? And because you're training people for the tech industry, is it commonplace for tech companies to hire from those elite, expensive universities?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the kind of the line that we use is that kind of talent is equally distributed, but opportunity isn't. You know, if you grew up in the Bay Area, and you know, your roommates, girlfriends, whatever works as a recruiter at Facebook, you know, you're going to have opportunities. You're going to have kind of networking opportunities as well as job opportunities that someone who grew up in rural America kind of quite simply doesn't.
And of course, you're originally from Tipperary. You've two very well-known brothers in business, Patrick and John, co-founders of Stripe, who are in California, as you are yourself. What was it like growing up in, I suppose, a fairly rural background in Tipperary, was it?
Yeah, we were sort of in the middle of nowhere. And I look back on it kind of very, very fondly in the sense that even though, you know, the upbringing was kind of isolated, you know, we still look back on it fondly. There was plenty of stimulation around, you know, our parents had a lot of books and so we could kind of burrow into the shelves. And I remember kind of we got the internet when I was growing up, and that was kind of super excited in the sense that we kind of grew up with our noses pressed against the window of the internet. You know, here was this tool very much in its infancy, very much in its kind of early days. But that was really exciting in a sort of Wild West frontier sort of way, in that, you know, you could go on the computer and, you know, at the time it was you went to the computer room and it was like a specific room where the desktop was. And, you know, by the time that I was going online, you know, Wikipedia had just started in 2003 or something. And I remember this excitement that, you know, of all the things you could be doing in the world, there were these people who were contributing to this online encyclopedia to try and, you know, democratize knowledge by having this, you know, free online website where you could read about basically anything at all. And I think it's easy to look at Wikipedia now as this established thing. But kind of I remember when people were still kind of creating it, people were still writing it, people were kind of filling in the edges of the map, as it were. You know, we grew up in very rural surroundings, but I think that in a certain way kind of prepared us for what we're doing now. And essentially, both with Stripe and with Lambda School, it is about kind of expanding choice or expanding access to opportunities that kind of weren't there before.
So you were quite excited by the fact that so much of human knowledge was being put up on the internet for free. But of course, that was before social media, when instead of enhancing our knowledge of the world, we decided to just talk rubbish to each other all day.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's easy to say that the internet is established, but kind of on a longer scale, you know, the internet, the kind of the web as we kind of know it in terms of Wikipedia and social media and everything, is only kind of 30 or 40 years old, maybe even slightly less. And to an extent, I think the future is kind of still unwritten, in the sense of maybe we're going through a bumpy patch with fake news and with social media, you know, ruining our attention spans and everything. But I think the kind of the fundamental kind of underpinnings of the internet, which is to say, you know, it doesn't matter about geography, it doesn't matter about your social class, it doesn't matter about your income level. You know, once you're online, you know, the original joke in this kind of 1993 New Yorker cartoon is, on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. And I think that's actually very exciting. You know, I think that anyone with an internet connection really can kind of participate in this global village, really can kind of participate in this kind of unprecedented knowledge sharing project. And, you know, if there are some corners that are less useful or less civil than others, you know, I think that's a pity. But I think kind of overall the enterprise is kind of really exciting to the extent that it enables new things like online education, like Lambda School.
Now, you grew up with a disability, Tommy. That must have been very difficult. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of on a similar kind of parallel strand to the internet stuff. In the sense, so I grew up with a physical disability, not kind of as major as it might otherwise have been, but still a physical disability that kind of limits my kind of range of motion and what I can do and everything. I knew that I was never going to be a pro footballer or a pilot or, you know, something that required a big physical aspect. You know, like today I use a crutch to get around, you know. And so for better or for worse, you know, when I was growing up, I was like, okay, well, my future job prospects are probably going to rely on whatever skills I have that aren't, you know, my physical disability to do something or other. And you know, like in when I was in secondary school, I worked or I kind of spent two summers at the Sunday Business Post. And there, kind of in a similar vein to on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. You know, when you're writing articles that just appear on Sundays, you know, no one knows that you have a physical disability, or it doesn't matter, in the sense that I was only kind of judged on the quality of my writing or the quality of my thoughts. And so, you know, I it was tough. You know, I'm not trying to make a light deal out of it or whatever. But I think that early on, I realized that the way to kind of minimize its impact was to focus on other things. And that's essentially what I did.
You were diagnosed with cerebral palsy. What age were you when your parents got the formal diagnosis?
I was probably something like a year or 18 months. My parents had kind of passing familiarity with cerebral palsy, but didn't kind of know too much about it. And I think kind of went home in a little bit of a daze when they heard it. But I remember the doctor that diagnosed me kind of turned to my mother and says, you know, when I'm curious about the outcome of the child with cerebral palsy, I don't look at the child, I look at the mother, and then I can kind of extrapolate out. And I think my mom took that very much to heart. You know, she really took it upon herself to ensure that it basically had as little of an impact on my life and my happiness as possible. And obviously, I'm kind of very, very lucky for that.
Now, you had to get surgery. You went to the US when you were quite young to get surgery. What age were you then? Or was that something that was very difficult, very traumatic for you?
Yeah, so in 2001, a surgeon from the US gave a talk at the Central Remedial Clinic in Dublin that my mother heard, and kind of in the back of her head, she said, oh, if Tommy ever needs surgery, we should try and include this surgeon. We should try and get, you know, a consult with this surgeon. And then when surgery was on the cards, you know, we went to the US and I had surgery. And my kind of abiding memory of it is, you know, everyone around me, I think, was a little bit nervous. You know, my parents were confident in the surgical staff, but it was still kind of a new thing. And I remember the morning of the surgery, the surgeon came in and, you know, I was just about to go under. And he was like, do you have any questions for me? Do your parents have any questions? You know, how are you feeling? And I, you know, you can tell that I was very nervous because I said, well, you know, the nurse said that I would get a teddy bear in post-op after I finished the surgery. And I was really curious, like, what color will that teddy bear be?
So you had a different set of priorities that day, probably the right priorities, actually, to help you with the whole thing and get through it.
Exactly. I was asking the important questions, let's be fair.
Now, obviously, later on, the United States featured again in your life because you were interested in journalism and you did some internships in the Sunday Business Post, which I remember we would have met. I think you would have been still in school at that time when I was there. And you studied journalism in New York. But you decided to stay in the US. Why was that?
Yeah, I think it's easy to kind of look back on, you know, your career, certainly in the early stages, as it being very planned out or it being kind of an inevitability that you would stay somewhere. And I think essentially what happened was, as you say, you know, worked in the Business Post when I was still in secondary school. Adrian Merkler gave me my start there. It was great. Went to college for journalism, and then kind of things sort of fell into place after that. So I graduated and got a job at a nonprofit as a writer. And so I was staying in the US doing that, and then found out about Lambda School. Actually, at the time, they were doing a pilot program in Europe. And so, you know, there's an extent to which, you know, had I not heard about Lambda School, you know, maybe the trajectory of my life would have gone a lot different. You know, maybe I would have stayed in America, maybe not.
Now, you're in California, and I have to ask you about the two brothers, Patrick and John. They're in California, although I'm sure they travel quite a bit. Do you meet up regularly? Do you see them much?
Oh, yeah. We're very, very close, in the sense that they were always we were always very close when we grew up in the middle of Tipperary in Ireland. And then just as time went on, we all had like fairly similar interests, all interested in technology, things like that. But as time went on, I think I started using them more and more for advice, in the sense that having John and Patrick as older brothers is a little bit like what I imagine having professional cheerleaders is like, in the sense that they were always very supportive in what I was doing. They were always very generous with their time in terms of offering advice.
Did you tend to take their advice, Tommy?
In some cases, more than others. I think that at the end of the day, you get advice from a bunch of smart, dedicated people, and then you make your own choice. And for better or for worse, I think probably most of the time I took their advice. But you always have to temper it a little bit, in the sense that they're not able to live my life for me.
Well, of course, they might disagree with each other about giving you the advice. You might get one bit of advice from Patrick and a completely different bit of advice from John.
That has actually happened. And I don't know how they deal with that at Stripe. At least they got all of their kind of co-founder arguments out of the way when they were kind of 5 and 3. So I don't know how that impacts Stripe. But certainly, it can sort of feel, I remember, when I was in college, they were always very, very interested in, what classes did you take this year, and what classes are you taking next year, and the classes this year, like what grades did you get? They're always demanding in the best way.
And what about the fact that they're clearly very wealthy individuals now? Do you have to find yourself maybe keeping their feet on the ground whenever you meet up? Do you have to pull them back down to earth every now and again?
I think they're lucky to have a lot of people in their life that are more than willing to pull them back down to earth. I mean, as a little brother, you know, I have a mandate to make sure that they always have their fair share of slagging and always have their fair share of being made fun of.
Did you ever think about working for Stripe?
Stripe has too many Collisons as it is, or would have too many Collisons, I think. I think there's enough there as it is. I think that it's time for something else. You know, people kind of ask me, you know, why I didn't go to work for Stripe, and there is a little bit of truth to wanting to kind of take my own path, as it were.
A number of times you've mentioned about money not really being a driving force. You went writing for a not-for-profit. In Lambda School, you're interested in the sort of fairness and equality of things and people from disadvantaged backgrounds, etc. Where do you think that comes from? Do you think to some extent, possibly even your own disability that you have dealt with and moved on from, made you a different person than you might have been without it?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think there's a lot of kind of empathy that gets built up. So a Lambda School student recently, who's legally blind, got a job. Those sorts of stories, you know, traditionally people, and I don't want to kind of speak for other disabilities, but people with cerebral palsy tend to be underemployed and tend to get married at lower rates than the general population when you account for kind of age and all the other factors. And, you know, for me, there's, you know, no reason that I shouldn't, you know, be able to keep down a full-time job. There's no reason for me to be able to, you know, get married, have kids, and have a full life in that regard as well. And so I think that, yeah, to an extent, there is this sense that, you know, to the extent that we can help people with disabilities take kind of full advantage of their skills, take full advantage of life and live, you know, as we say, kind of as normal a life as possible, where the disability kind of impacts them as little as possible, where, you know, you have a disability, but the disability doesn't kind of have you, those sorts of problems and help kind of those sorts of people. I think that, you know, I think that's a great thing to work on.
Just one thing, Tommy, growing up in rural Ireland with the kind of access to the internet that you had and your own difficulties with your own disability, did that access make life, did it make it a lot easier?
Oh, yeah, like 100%. In the sense that sometimes, you know, you think about if I had been born 50 or 100 years ago, you know, in the same kind of circumstances, you know, with a disability growing up in rural Tipperary, you know, my life would have been very different and quite frankly kind of much more isolated, in the sense that there would have been books at home, people would have visited, but there would have been I guess kind of precious few opportunities to travel, to see the world, to get to talk to people that were different to me, to get to talk to you know, people from foreign countries or whatever. And you know, there's an extent to which I feel very, very lucky that I was born when I was, and a little bit jealous that I wasn't born, you know, 50 or 100 years in the future, in the sense of I'm kind of really excited for the communication breakthroughs that presumably are you know, going to come hopefully in the next couple decades. And again, to the extent that they can represent quality of life improvements for people with disabilities or people, you know, living in rural areas or whatever, you know, I'm kind of very excited about that.
Well, Tommy Collison of Lambda School, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Yeah, thanks for having me.